This podcast sponsored by Cherry Hill Volvo.
At Cherry Hill Volvo, we have absolutely incredible offers, and a plethora of both new and certified Volvos from which to choose. Join Cherry Hill Volvo for the pricing and attention you deserve. I am Judith Krupnik, president of Cherry Hill Volvo.
Hi, I'm Lauren Sherman, the host of Fashion People. I love fashion, obviously, but shopping for fashion online is kind of annoying. There's endless scrolling, my size is always out of stock, and I can't actually find what I want. No one has really made this work for me. That is until List. Instead of browsing different stores one by one, on List you can see and shop all of the best fashion. List is the secret shopping weapon now used by all my most stylish, cool, and in-the-know friends. Don't shop around. Join 200 million fashion shoppers, including me, on List.com. That's L-Y-S-T. Or download the List app on the App Store today.
Cherry Hill Volvo is honored to sponsor the Rich Zeoli podcast. We thank Rich for informing and entertaining all of us. Rich Zeoli, 1210 Talk Radio and Cherry Hill Volvo, an absolutely amazing team.
Now, 60 minutes of nonstop talk on the Rich Zeoli podcast.
So did you get your PPP money? If you didn't, it's because you're probably not a well-connected Washington crony. What an absolute disgrace in so many ways. I'll tell you about that. Yes, it's true. The virus numbers are rising, but the death numbers are going down dramatically because younger, healthier people are not dying from it. Welcome back to the show. Glad you're here. The Zeoli Show on Twitter at Rich Zeoli, 855-839-1210 and facebook.com/Zeoli Show. We're happy to have you with us today, of course, every day. So yesterday at the White House press briefing, Kayleigh McEnany, the White House press secretary, got a number of questions about the president's tweet about NASCAR and the Confederate flag and Bubba Wallace. So she responded to that. And Kayleigh's a fighter. So she goes on offense right away, which is probably the best strategy you can employ when you're dealing with the press and you're in the Trump administration. You gotta just play offense. It's like a battleground in there. So first of all, this is the question the reporter asks her regarding the president's Confederate flag statement on Twitter, what he said to NASCAR. Let's start with cut five, Bill.
What exactly does the president see as positive or uniting then about the Confederate flag? Why did he decide to tweet about it then this morning?
The president never used those words. Those are the words of a reporter, not that of the president of the United States. Yes, Phil.
She was proceeded to get a number of other questions regarding what the president said, what the president meant. Then she scolded the liberal White House press. Cut number four.
Finally, I'd end with this. You know, I was asked probably 12 questions about the Confederate flag. This president's focused on action, and I'm a little dismayed that I didn't receive one question on the deaths that we got in this country this weekend. I didn't receive one question about New York City shootings doubling for the third straight week, and over the last 7 days, shootings skyrocket by 142%. Not one question. I didn't receive one question about five children who were killed, and I'll leave you with this remark by a dad. It broke my heart. A dad of an eight-year-old lost in Atlanta this weekend. They say Black Lives Matters. You killed a child. She didn't do nothing to nobody, was his quote. We need to be focused on securing our streets, making sure no lives are lost, because all Black lives matter. That of David Dorn and that of this eight-year-old girl. Thank you.
So the president's original tweet was, has Bubba Wallace apologized to all those great NASCAR drivers and officials who came to his aid, stood by his side, and were willing to sacrifice everything for him, only to find out that the whole thing was just another hoax, capital letters. That and flag decision has caused lowest ratings ever, in all caps, ever. Flag decision being the NASCAR's decision to remove the Confederate flag. So Kayleigh McEnany got a lot of questions about that. Senator Lindsey Graham, who represents the state of South Carolina and is up for re-election, he's in a tough fight. He was on Brian Kilmeade's radio show yesterday. This is what he said in response to the president's tweet.
I just want to make one comment about NASCAR. I grew up in South Carolina. NASCAR Hall of Fame is in Darlington. I've been going to car races as a kid with my dad, my uncle, from the time I was old enough to see over the dashboard. NASCAR made a decision to ban the Confederate flag inside the infield and at NASCAR arenas. They're trying to grow the sport. And I've lived in South Carolina all my life. And if you're in business, the Confederate flag is not a good way to grow your business. The idea that Bubba Wallace, who is the only, I think, African-American driver was upset by somebody finding a noose in the garage made perfect sense to me. So what I would tell people from outside of South Carolina, that NASCAR is trying to grow the sport, and one way you grow the sport is you take images that divide us and ask that they not be brought into the venue. That makes sense to me.
So the president tweeted this out. Has Bubba Wallace apologized for all those great NASCAR drivers and officials who came to his aid, stood by his side, and were willing to sacrifice everything for him, only to find out that the whole thing was just another hoax? That and flag decision, which has caused lowest ratings ever.
Well, I don't think Bubba Wallace has anything to apologize for. I do say this about the drivers. Even though it was a news created to hold the door open, in the times in which we live, there's a lot of anxiety. So what did you see? You saw the best in NASCAR. When there was a chance that it was a threat against Bubba Wallace, they all rallied to Bubba's side. So I would be looking to celebrate that kind of attitude more than being worried about it being a hoax.
So that's Lindsey Graham's comments as he faces a tough re-election in South Carolina. You see why the tweets wind up causing all kinds of, you know, everybody winds up then discussing the president's tweets. And then you begin to wonder, you know, what is the strategy here? And obviously, he's not changing his strategy. This is what the president does. It's what he does. He thinks it's effective for him. He thinks it works. Debating it is kind of a moot point. It's not going to change. He hasn't changed. He's never going to change. But it is interesting, though, that when all this started, the immediate reaction was that he was defending the Confederate flag. First of all, there's no reason to defend the Confederate flag. I didn't get that from his tweet because he said the flag decision has resulted in low ratings. People were mad at NASCAR for doing it. But it is a question, though, of why anyone would defend the Confederate flag, which is the flag that was used, obviously, by the people that seceded from the United States of America. But here's another question. Why would anyone use the phrase Democrat Party anymore either? So this is a really interesting question that was posed by a lawmaker, actually, something I've said for years, right? I've brought this up too. I said, if you're going to change names, you're going to change statues, if you're going to rename things, why don't you rename the Democrat Party? Because it seems to me like this is a party that has a very, very long, rich history of racism and segregation and the Klan and slavery and all of it. Why don't we ever talk about that? Why don't we ever talk about renaming that? You notice, I mean, they're renaming all these other things, they're removing all these symbols. It seems like the Democrat Party is a symbol of segregation, of Jim Crow, of slavery and all these other things. I've been saying that for years. It kind of fell on deaf ears. People would always say things like, oh, the parties have flipped. I've told you how they haven't. I've showed you that. I've traced that line from the Confederacy to the progressive Woodrow Wilson in the 19-teens, to Franklin Roosevelt, to Lyndon Johnson, to Barack Obama, to Bernie Sanders, a clear unbroken line of progressivism. But here's a Democrat Georgia State Representative Vernon Jones. Cut two.
Hello, America. This is State Representative Vernon Jones from Georgia. You know, the late Reverend Vernon John once said, if you see a good fight, go join in. Well, I'm all in. Because what I see happening between Democrats and the left banding together, going throughout this country, unlawfully tearing down statues and removing monuments and changing the name of streets and buildings, because they feel it's associated with racism and bigotry and Confederacy. As a matter of fact, Speaker Nancy Pelosi has recently removed portraits of several former speakers of the House from the U.S. Capitol because she feels as though that they were associated with bigotry and the Confederacy. But here's what they're not touching and not banning at all or changing the name, the Democratic Party. Wasn't it Democrats who opposed the freedom of slavery and wanted to keep slaves? Wasn't it the Democrats who started the Ku Klux Klan? And there was a Democrat by the name of Margaret Sanger who said that blacks and immigrants and the indigent, that they were all human weeds and that they were reckless, get this, reckless breeders? Wow. And wasn't it mostly Democrats that opposed the Voters' Rights Act and the Civil Rights Act, including Senator Robert Byrd, a Democrat, who was a card-carrying KKK member who was eulogized by another Democrat, U.S. Senator Joe Biden, which he doesn't remember right now. And then we had a presidential nominee Democrat who said that she admired the courage of Margaret Sanger when she received the Margaret Sanger Award. That's Hillary Clinton. Now, wait a minute. Finally, we had that same Joe Biden, a Democrat, who said that if you don't vote for him, you ain't black. Let me tell you something. Join me and others. Let's challenge the Democratic Party to have at their national convention the number one platform issue that they will disband and change the Democratic Party. It would no longer be called the Democratic Party. Why? Because it's associated with racism, bigotry, and the Confederacy.
Wow. I tell you what, bravo to that state legislator for bringing that up. Now, before the trolls come after me on Twitter and go, the party's flipped. Party's never flipped. It's the same ideology that's always been there. There's a book by Emery Thomas. My friend who's a professor reviewed this book. It's a history book about the Confederacy, the Confederate States of America. And we don't teach this stuff in school, and it totally shatters the narrative that the Confederate States of America were really a bunch of conservatives, right? It shatters that narrative. So the professor who looks into the reasons of the Confederacy, he writes, first, there was the existence of a distinctive South tied together by a Southern folk culture among whites, albeit threatened by the presence of 4 million slaves. Second, the professor shows how secession was driven by radicals, but ultimately ended up as a contract between the seceded states. Southerners generally had adopted radical rhetoric and tactics to transform their ideology into nationalism. But once that transformation had occurred in secession, the radicals became superfluous. The fundamental goal of the Southern Revolution was the preservation of the Southern lifestyle as Southerners then lived it, he writes. In the process of defending this distinct way of life, the Confederate national government came to embody or endorse much of what the war was putatively being fought over from the Southern point of view. As the professor puts it, to fulfill Southern nationalism, Confederate Southerners had to slaughter some of the sacred cows and overturn some of the shibboleths that had previously defined them as a people. For example, the policies of the Confederate government came to include the first draft in American history, the first income tax, and the implementation of martial law. So much for states' rights and less federal tyranny. In addition, the Confederate government set out to liberalize the institution of slavery before arming their slaves in exchange for freedom. All of this, in the view, makes the Confederate nation something new under the 19th century sun. The Southern nation became more Confederate and less Southern. They lost what they was distinctively theirs, but still came to exemplify something new and revolutionary in Southern history. More evidence of the revolutionary nature of the break with the past can be seen in the case of Southern slave and Southern women. Slaves formerly depicted as dependents needing protection were outfitted and sent out to die for the Confederate cause in exchange for their freedom. Southern women saw their roles change as well as they became plantation managers and took on other jobs for their young nation. The conclusion, basically, from the book The Confederate Nation, 1861 to 1865, by Professor Emery M. Thomas, which was reviewed by my friend who's a professor who, I won't say his name because I don't know if he wants to be canceled or not. But the whole point of the book was that the Confederate States of America were all about big government, big centralized government. And they were all about taking away individual rights. And the whole idea that they were going to create was some sort of a system to protect and provide everything for slaves. They argued back then, well, you know, slavery, you get free housing, you get free medical care, you get all the benefits of it without having to actually go find a job. Those were arguments they actually used back then. And then, of course, the first federal income tax. Now, the Confederate States of America came up with the first income tax. In the Confederate States of America, who was the first president who came up with the income tax for the United States of America? I'll wait for it. That would be Woodrow Wilson, Democrat Woodrow Wilson in the 19-teens. We all know that the 16th Amendment to the Constitution that Wilson ushered in and his whole era of progressivism. So again, I ask you, please explain to me where the party's flipped. You go from the Confederacy with the idea of an income tax right up to Woodrow Wilson, who literally, they're both Democrats, and Wilson, who shows Birth of a Nation at the White House with Klan leaders present. And Wilson, Woodrow Wilson, Democrat, who resegregates the federal government after the Republicans had won the Civil War and defeated the Democrat secessionists and took down the Confederate flags everywhere. the Republicans made it a point, people like President Ulysses S. Grant, for example, who they want to cancel now, made it a point to hire freed slaves, to hire black Americans in the government. They wanted to lead by example. They wanted to integrate as many ways as possible. So they did those things. Woodrow Wilson resegregated the federal government. They threw out everybody who was black working in the federal government. Democrat Woodrow Wilson. Now they're taking his name off things. I don't want them to, because I want his racist legacy to stand for itself. But explain to me how the party's flipped if you have this unbroken line of progressive thought in the Confederate States of America, and this progressive thought of an income tax or anything else, right up to the federal government under Woodrow Wilson, Democrat, the same idea of taking care of everybody from cradle to grave that the Confederate States of America embraced, right up to Franklin Delano Roosevelt with all of his visions and his ideas and his new deals. Lyndon Johnson, the war on society, the war on poverty, right? The war on poverty, I should say, the Great Society. Barack Obama with his universal healthcare ideas. Bernie Sanders with his socialist revolution. But again, if the party's flipped, I have to ask the question to Democrats, why are you still using the name? If you really don't believe that it's the same party, why are you using the name? With all this cancel culture that's going on, this state representative makes such a great point. I mean, I've been saying this for years, but I'm glad he said it too. Why would you keep this name, right? I mean, Lady Antebellum changed their name. They're Lady A now, right? They changed their name. The Dixie Chicks are just the Chicks until they figure out the Chicks is also offensive. Then they're just going to be the. But why would you keep the name Democrat? Why would you keep the name Democratic Party, which is the official name? Why would you keep that name? This is a party of the Klan. It's a party of slavery. It's a party of Jim Crow. It's a party of segregation. Why would you keep it? Change the name. Ditch it. Abandon the name. If you're so certain that the party's flipped and that's not the same Democrat Party anymore, even though your nominee used to pal around with Seggies, as Chris Matthews called them, Seggies, segregationists, if you're so confident that it's a different party, change the name. Isn't that something that they never did? I mean, think about that, right? In the course of the Democrat Party's history, it was Democrats that put into law segregation. People forget this about Jim Crow. Jim Crow was institutionalized segregation. If a business didn't want to segregate, they were fined. They were ordered by the law to segregate their customers. It was not private sector racist diner owners who were doing it. It was the government's mandates. That doesn't mean there weren't racist diner owners. I'm just saying it was the government mandate under Jim Crow. George Wallace, who was a Democrat governor of Alabama, who was a staunch segregationist, who blocked kids from going to school and they had to use federal troops. A Republican president had to send the National Guard in to escort kids into a school because the Democrat Southern governor was blocking the little black kids from going into school. Why would Democrats keep the name of this party? Why would they want to be associated with this if they've really changed, if they've really flipped? And here's the reason. Ready? Because their hero is Franklin Delano Roosevelt. He is their hero. It's the reason why in all of this debate, you have never heard anybody come out and say, it is time to rename everything named after Roosevelt. It is time now to take down the Roosevelt Memorial in Washington, D.C., which is a huge memorial that they erected, the Democrats erected for their hero, FDR, their staunch socialist hero, FDR. Bernie Sanders cites him all the time. Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez cites him all the time. She named the Green New Deal after Roosevelt's New Deal. Roosevelt tried to pack the Supreme Court. Democrat candidates running for president echoed that in their platforms. Cory Booker said he wanted to also increase the size of the Supreme Court. FDR is their hero and FDR is a Democrat. Why would FDR have been a Democrat? Why would FDR have been a Democrat and be part of such a racist party with such a rich racist history? Why would he be part of that? Why would Wilson be part of it? What does it tell you about these people? What does it tell you about these people that they were part of this racist party? I just want to know. I'm curious. And if the Democrats today are so want to erase history, why don't they start with their own? I mean, why don't they rebrand, right? Why don't they ditch that and call themselves what they really are? Progressives. Well, that's what Woodrow Wilson was. You see, back then, socialism had a really dirty connotation to it. So, you know, you didn't call yourself a socialist back then. You called yourself a progressive. So you ran around the world saying, I'm a socialist. And it was very, very politically incorrect in America. But when you said I was a progressive, well, that's different, right? And what did a progressive stand for in the 19-teens? Same thing it stands for today. using government to make progress, using government to fulfill people's lives by making sure they get more money, by making sure they get more job security, by making sure they have safer work conditions, by doing things on healthcare, the environment, blah, 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 blah. Now, I know you're going to bring up Teddy Roosevelt if you're a hater and say Teddy Roosevelt was a progressive. True. I'll give you John F. Kennedy, who was a conservative. I'm not saying that every single Republican and every single Democrat, I'm saying that the line is unbroken from 1861 all the way up to now in 2020. Why don't Democrats just change the name of their freaking party already? This is everything that we're talking about today. Slavery, racism, institution, literally, you want to know about systemic racism? You cannot get more systemic than Jim Crow laws of the South, which were done purposely to keep segregation. You can't get more institutionalized than a state law that says you must segregate your people. And then, of course, they decided to come up with a solution to address the school segregation problem. The solution they came up with was called busing. They were going to bus children of different colors into different schools. That was how it was described back then. Guess who opposed it back then? Well, you know, the presumptive Democrat nominee, Joe Biden, who opposed busing, did not want it. In fact, he was very fiery vocally against it, as were many Democrats back then, by the way. Many Democrats were opposed to busing. Some Democrats threatened to absolutely not comply. Segregationist pals of Joe Biden's. But if the Democrat Party today is so different than the Democrat Party then, why are they still the Democrats? Why are they still Democrats? Anybody ever asked that question? Anyway, I'm glad that state senator did. I really am. I'm really glad because, you know, the whole idea of saying that the parties flipped, they never did. Bill Clinton won the South in 1992 in the presidential election. He won the South. Barack Obama did very well in the South. The idea of it being a regional party, so you'll hear that lie sometimes. People go, oh, it was a regional party. There were Northern Democrats and Southern Democrats. Let me ask you a question. Why would you, if you had a choice, you're living in the 1870s, you're living in the 1880s, you're living in the 1900s, you have a choice. You can join the party that ended slavery or the party that fought to keep it. Which party do you join? I think the answer speaks a lot, don't you?
The Rich Zeoli Show on your schedule. This is the Zeoli Show podcast.
Why did Dawn, why did you tweet out about the bubonic plague? What was that?
I know all these news agencies are like pumping up that there's this bubonic. There was one case of bubonic plague in like Mongolia, and now they're all putting out on social media bubonic plague.
And honey, like, cancel the Mongolian restaurant reservation.
And I'm like, really? Like, come on already. It's just, I think they're just trying to make everybody freak out and stay inside.
When in
2020. All right, so we got the bubonic plague, Dawn. We have the murder hornets. We have the flesh-eating amoeba. What else do we got?
Oh, yeah, the flesh-eating amoeba. The locusts are coming.
I'm
sure
locusts.
I'm skipping a few things.
You see the blood moon the other night? That was awesome.
Yes, that was so cool. And now it's like an egg. It's like a big egg in the sky.
Yeah, the egg moon, right?
The egg moon.
I like the egg moon. That was good. The bubonic plague, that was spread by rats, right?
Yes.
From ships?
Yes.
Awesome.
It's nasty. Awesome. Remember, bubonic plague was what they said was spreading in like California with all the homelessness and stuff. And they had the rats biting the people. That was, but that story went
nowhere.
Come
to California. Our wineries are closed, but our bubonic plague is still available for you on the streets.
It's just crazy.
Did you hear that California Governor Gavin Newsom ordered the wineries closed but kept his own open?
Typical.
Right?
Typical. Unless you're his like neighbor and you're getting some, you know, wine for free or whatever, then.
Yeah, right. Then, you know. Oh, man.
And his ex-wife, Kimberly Guilfoyle, right? She's tested positive for COVID.
She did. Yeah.
Reportedly.
But she's a rock, so she'll beat it.
Yeah, she's asymptomatic, right? But they must, because they travel with the president, you know, I imagine they're testing them. So she tested and was surprised, I guess.
Yeah. Well, you know, I mean, it's Kimberly. I guess if they asked Kimberly Guilfoyle, would you rather have COVID-19 or Gavin Newsom back? She said COVID-19. She had a pick.
Well, she's got Don Jr. I mean, he's, you know.
I mean, Don Jr. is looking pretty good, right?
He's looking very good. That's what I meant. I didn't want to say, you know, we're so afraid to say anything complimentary about anybody, but
I don't care. They're going to cancel me any day now, so I might as well get it all out of my system. Don Jr. used to be a fat guy. You know that, right?
No.
Oh, yeah. Go back and Google the pictures of him when he proposed to his first wife, Vanessa, right? And a little chunk amongst that guy back then. You know what I mean?
So he's very handsome, very fit.
That's it. Turned it all around. Yeah. I say that as a source of inspiration because you can too. I came in the studio yesterday, you know, because I was doing a Fox News radio show, and I saw Spike Eskin, our program director, brand manager, whatever the hell they call it now. And so I saw Spike, and we had a nice chat in the hallway, mask to mask. And I said, because, you know, Spike's all, what is he? Like, he's like 103 pounds or something like that, right?
He's very thin, very fit.
Very fit, very thin, very,
vegan.
Very handsome man.
Yes.
And I said to him, I got fat, didn't I, in the COVID, right? Right, Spike? And he dodged the question. I said, come on, Spike, look at this. Look. And he said, well, you know, look, you got kids. What do you care, you know? I said, Spike, go get that Nutrisystem endorsement back, all right? I'm going to need it.
Well, that's everybody. Everybody's complaining about this, that we're all stuck inside, right? And then we're
not Spike. I think he lost weight in the quarantine. I'm telling you, Dawn, like everybody I know gained at least 19 pounds, it seems. At least they got the COVID-19. But I saw Spike yesterday. I'm like, dude, what did you actually, you're the one guy who lost weight in America during all this?
Well, it's because he's vegan. So there's not everybody else is doing takeout trying to support, you know, businesses.
Oh, yeah,
because
you never meet a fat vegan.
Stop.
I'm just going to leave that right there.
And let it ride.
And just let it go. We'll just let it hang out there, Bill. Just let it hang
let
out
it hang.
There.
We'll play
like the scent of a Beyond Burger. Just let it hang out there.
We'll play Spike's bed to get us over. Go.
Now, I think that the economy is doing better, which is nice, which is good. I'm excited about that fact. Consumer confidence is better. People are spending money. This guy, this analyst who was on CNBC, he talked about the market right now, which is great. This makes people very, very happy. Cut 11, Bill.
I think the markets are going up. I think they're going up a lot more than people think. I think, you know, we may stall here for a while into the fall, into September, October, November. But I think you're going to get a rocket ship coming in the fall of this year. And I think the Dow's going to the S&P is going to trade out above 4,000.
Oh, what? We're at 3130 now. So that's that's more bullish than you've been in the past. So you said over 4,000 by what, the next how many months? 12 months?
In the next 12 months, I think the S&P will be above 4,000.
So that's about 25%.
I don't know, Dawn. I don't think the interviewer liked that guess very much.
No,
did you catch
not at
that?
All.
He was kind of like trying to dismiss everything.
Yes,
the entire thing.
I know. Well, everybody's trying to downplay everything, like all the jobs numbers and the USMCA. I think helped boost things. And I saw a headline. CBS said, "Well, unemployment could be bad again, or something." You know, everybody's like, "Well, it could." Well, bubonic plague could return. It's like, what else could happen?
Yeah, bubonic plague could come back with the murder hornets, or it couldn't. Because that's how those things work, right?
Yes, the news media has become, remember that bit on Saturday Night Live? It was like Debbie Downer.
Mm-hmm.
That's the news media. It's like Debbie Downer. Everything, well, it could go bad again.
That's great. It's such a great analogy. Yeah, don't you think the economy is going to destroy itself in the next couple of months? No, it's going to be great. Come on, how could you possibly think that? Those are the questions.
Yeah.
You don't have a crystal ball. How do you know the economy is not going to be absolutely in destruction? How do you know it will be, I guess, would be my follow-up question to that.
Yeah, that's the thing. So every time that they make the prediction of, oh, this is going to be doom and gloom, it never, almost never is. It's always,
it's
never
like the opposite.
As bad. Yeah, it's never
at this
as
point.
Bad
I want them
be.
To keep predicting doom and gloom because I'm worried that if they predict great economic numbers, we're going to get doom and gloom.
Yep.
But wouldn't you be shocked if you ever saw anything in the news right now, in the national news I'm talking about, where they came out and reported hopeful things? Because you just don't see it on local news, but nationally, not so much.
No. In fact, I want to see when the next jobs report comes out, the next unemployment numbers come out. If the night, see, if the media were smart, what they would do is the night before, they would all come out and predict it was going to be amazing. Epic numbers, blowout, the economy is back, it's roaring. And then the opposite would happen. It's like whatever the media says, it's like George Costanza, just do the opposite.
Yes, exactly.
But they won't catch on because they're so dumb they can't figure that out. So they'll come on the night before and make the same gloom and doom predictions.
Yes.
And then when the numbers are good again, they're going to go, well, it won't last. It's not going to last. I mean, it's just a blip. Just a blip. It's like a week. It's going to be gone again or something like that, you know? Total downers. Imagine hanging out with them, how boring and depressing they would be. You know, you could get food poisoning. Yeah, I could or I couldn't.
This is a Nuzioli show bit. I could or I couldn't.
Yes.
I could or I couldn't.
They read the menu.
Maybe I will. Maybe I won't. Who knows?
They read the menu at every restaurant. Eating raw, undercooked fish or meat could really get you food poisoning. Well, you know, I could get this.
Or you couldn't.
Just
that's what I would say if I was the waiter.
Right.
Do you want me to burn that burger? Why? Well, I could get food poisoning. I said, yeah, or you couldn't. But one thing I do know you will get is a terrible tasting hockey puck on your plate.
Who wants a well-done burger?
Some states require them to cook burgers medium well. I won't order them that way. If I go to a restaurant, they have it on the menu. I think they have it in South Carolina. I might be mistaken. But, you know, we cook everything to 160 degrees. I don't want it. Don't give me your overcooked, dry excuse for a burger at that point, you know?
Yeah.
It shatters when you throw against the wall.
What I do is I bring in my own raw beef and I mix it in with their beef. That's what I do. It's easier that way.
Yeah.
All right. 855-839-1210. We are going to get the latest on sports is coming back in America, which is great. It's really amazing stuff. We're happy about that. It's going to be great for the economy, great for our American psyche, our national morale. Talk to John Marks from our sister station, 94 WIP, in just a little bit. But let's say good morning to Dawn and check in. Hello, Dawn.
Hey, good morning. This is the Zioli Show News that's sponsored by Hint Water. We have 72 degrees right now. And a lot going on in Philadelphia. We've talked a lot about the gunfire, the violence, 31 shootings over several days, including several children shot. And Philadelphia police talking about homicides up 27%. Mayor Kenney blaming too many guns. Zioli will be talking a lot over the next couple of today and tomorrow. The upcoming visit. A lot of excitement with Vice President
Mike
Pence. Did you
say Kenny's blaming guns and not the people who have the guns in their hands?
That's correct. He blames guns.
Okay.
Not the people.
Guns are all shooting themselves again?
Guns are the problem.
Guns are going off again.
Right. And so nobody asked him, well, is there evidence that there are more guns in the neighborhoods than there were a year ago? You know? But I guess there are a lot more guns somehow.
Yeah, and then again, the guns have minds of their own. Let's Skynet again. They're just, you know, that's what they do.
They come alive at night.
They come alive at night.
So Zioli will be talking about VP Pence coming to Pennsylvania. So he's doing a bus tour. Starts in Lancaster, ends in Philadelphia. So he's going to actually deliver remarks to law enforcement officers as well as their families. This is really nice with their families there at the FOP Lodge Number 5, our friends there in Philadelphia. Primary day in New Jersey. We've talked about that this morning. U.S. Supreme Court with some rulings about upholding a 1991 law that bars robocalls to cell phones, which I love this. They also had a ruling about the Keystone Pipeline. So Keystone Pipeline still has to jump through the hoops of, you know, all of the regulations, essentially. Zioli Show News follow-up on that viral video. More than 40 million views on this from May. Now the Manhattan DA's office charging Amy Cooper. Everybody called her a Karen, but she's Amy
Cooper.
Oh, the
Central Park Karen.
Yes.
Right. Yes, I was away for when this happened. So she's the one who called, said she was going to call the cops on the guy who was the bird watcher, right?
Yes. So he's an African-American guy. And there's a bird, like a huge bird watching community, you know, like in Cape May. This one's in Central Park. So she starts threatening him. He starts he and others start recording what's happening. And you hear her like, hello, 911. Yes, there's an African-American man. He's threatening me, blah, blah, blah. So she's making the point that it's an African-American man threatening her. So this goes viral. So she ends up getting fired from her job. They took away her rescue dog for a while or whatever, but she got the dog back. She publicly apologized. Went on national news, apologized profusely. She still lost her job. The guy, Christian Cooper, no relation because they're both named Cooper, but he actually came out and said, look, I forgive her. Give her a break. It's not like he was the most empathetic person. So he actually completely forgave her and said everybody needed to lighten up.
She was like, she was the first person to be canceled. And this happened before George Floyd was killed.
Yeah, so it was all within that realm, you know, all of these things were happening.
And didn't some idiot afternoon sports host on another station defend her?
Yes.
I believe he did, right?
Yeah.
Yes, he did.
Yes, he did.
He was an idiot. Well, yeah. he's either...
I think he missed the call on that one. What do you think?
Well, he couldn't have watched the... Because this guy is like a, you know, like a nerdy, not to, you know, he's a bird watcher. He's like, excuse me, ma'am, you need to leash your dog. You know, he's like a very polite, nerdy kind of a guy. And right. She just unleashed on the guy.
And so so if you defend the white woman who's threatening to call the cops on the guy just because he's black, just she's going to use race as her advantage right there. Total racist move. And you defend that, you'd say that would be, would you say that that's a miss, Bill?
100% a miss.
That would be a miss, right?
100%.
Yeah. And then if you throw your headphones down like a crybaby and walk out of the studio, because I'd say that's a miss too.
Yes.
Okay. Just a bit.
That was a sin. That was very bad. Speaking of watching the birds,
that little crybaby blocked me on Twitter, so I can't say it. You know, I don't know what he said. He blocked everybody on Twitter. He's a big tough guy. Calls people racist, then blocks them on Twitter. Then defends the white woman who calls the cops on a guy and says, "I'm going to tell them you're black because you're black," and I'm going to act like a scared white woman in the park.
Right.
And seen it on TV. Or is seen on TV having a temper tantrum.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Exactly. So, anyway, what else?
Okay, speaking of watching the birds, the Eagles are giving season ticket holders an opt-out clause due to COVID-19. So I know Bilenial and his dad are season ticket holders. So in any event, they release a statement saying, look, we understand even with safety measures in place, you may have concerns about attending games in person. So the Eagles put this word out that if you want to opt out to defer your season tickets for the 2020 season, Dawn and her family could take them for... No, I'm just kidding.
Very nice.
I just don't think anybody's going to do this. But if they do, please, call me. I'd love to just, help keep your seat warm.
Listen, that's very kind of you. You're a very gracious person. I told you that.
I'm just putting this personal offer out there for people.
Very nice.
But yeah, so they have an opt out if people, which tells me, see, they're planning on having football.
Well, I will talk to John Marks about that and find out what his thoughts are, what he's hearing on the inside scoop.
Ooh, we love that inside scoop. So the NBC 10 First Alert forecast, real quick here. It's just a hot, muggy week all week long. Today, 90 degrees is the high. That afternoon rain hits around 3 o'clock and some, unfortunately, possible storms again this afternoon. Much of the same throughout the week, with the notable exception of Thursday. So Thursday's 91 degrees, but no rain or storms. So it's just hot. It's humid. Eat ice cream. Dairy free. I don't know what to tell you. Drink lots of water, though. Seriously, drink lots of water because you dehydrate so much more quickly. Hint is pure water infused with surprisingly true fruit flavors, including watermelon, blackberry, cherry. No sugar, sweeteners, or calories. And available in your local grocery store or drinkhint.com. Hint, water with a touch of true fruit flavor. That's our sponsor. And that's Zeoli Show News Live.
Thank you, Dawn. Appreciate it. So a Biden-founded law firm, as well as a company tied to Pelosi, received PPP funds, according to documents. Loans come as Biden accuses Trump of cronyism. This is from Fox News. A prominent Delaware law firm founded by presumptive Democratic presidential nominee Joe Biden received a Paycheck Protection Program loan for between $150,000 and $350,000, according to records released Monday by the Treasury Department and the Small Business Administration. The Trump campaign told Fox News that the records conflict with recent messaging from the Biden campaign that the PPP is both ineffective and a vehicle to reward Trump cronies. Instead of attacking President Trump as an involuntary reflux, maybe Joe Biden should just say thank you once in a while. Trump campaign director of communications Tim Murtaugh told Fox News the PPP saved 51 million jobs nationally, including at Biden's old law firm and a number of companies connected to Obama administration alums. Now, the problem with this program is that as people do, they jump on board to take advantage of it. And the program was meant to help a lot of small businesses. But a lot of people were able to get money because they're very, very connected. And on both sides of the aisle, by the way, Trump-connected lobbyists were able to steer more than $10 billion in taxpayer money to their wealthy clients, according to the story here. Meanwhile, House Speaker Nancy Pelosi's team is rejecting reports that a business connected to her husband received big money under the government's emergency coronavirus relief program, arguing that his connection to the company is minimal. The company EDI Associates in San Rafael, California, has 52 employees and says it's in the full-service restaurant business. The company received between $350,000 and $1 million in Paycheck Protection Program. He's an investor. Pelosi spokesperson Drew Hamill told Fox News he wasn't involved in the application for the loan, nor was he aware of it. Four other House members surfaced in previous reports about businesses that took PPP money, including Republican Representatives Roger Williams of Texas, Vicky Hartzletter of Missouri, and Democrats Susie Lee of Nevada and Debbie Muscarell Powell of Florida, who have ties to companies that are either run by their families or employ their spouses as a senior executive. The Daily Beast reported that other well-known individuals and entities received generous PPP funds, including a fiscal responsibility advocacy organization run by Grover Norquist, Americans Against Taxation. Former Secretary of State Madeleine Albright, the nonprofit headed by former Trump campaign official David Bossie, and a political strategy firm linked to two alumni of the Obama White House who've turned anti-Trump podcasting into a lucrative enterprise. I think what burns people about this is not so much that these people got the money, it's that other people didn't, that some small businesses were turned down and other people were able to get the money because they're powerful, they're connected, they've got access in Washington, and that's the problem, right? I can't tell you definitively, I don't know, whether or not the PPP actually saved jobs at those companies and kept those companies afloat. I'm going to assume best of intentions. But the frustration comes in when you hear these names being thrown about, people related to Jared Kushner, people related to Barack Obama, and you hear all this thrown out there, and then I've got small businesses that are emailing me and tweeting at me saying, I was denied. How come I didn't get my money? I was denied this. People that still don't have their unemployment. That's the problem. That's what makes people upset by this. And here's the reason why this happens. This happens because, like every other good intention, like every other good program that's, you know, the idea of this is going to be a good program, it's going to help people. When the bureaucracy gets in there and does its thing, it does what bureaucracies always do. And this is always the problem. This is the problem with these things. It's that they always have the best of intentions with these big federal programs. You know, here's all this money. We're going to do this. We're going to do that. And then the bureaucracy does what it does. And then DC has a way of taking care of itself. The lobbyists get in there. The consultants get in there. And the friends of the friends of the congressperson and this person and that person. And then suddenly now money is... And look, should they have gotten the money? Again, I don't know enough to say. I'd have to do a lot more research on that to figure out if they actually were justified in getting it. I'm going to assume so. And I'm not going to say that the SBA had ill intent. But when these things occur and people otherwise didn't get the help that they needed, they're going to be angry. They're going to be frustrated. You're going to hear a lot more about this story. And it's just a reminder for you of just the power of the bureaucracy and the power of the swamp. Because at the end of the day, all this BS, the Democrats fighting each other, Republicans and Democrats fighting each other, right? And they can't reach across the aisle. They can't get anything done. They go on TV. They bash each other. They trash each other. The one thing that they are able to do is reach across the aisle and help each other. Help each other, whether they're Biden alums, they're Obama alums, right? They're Bush people, they're Trump people. It's why so many people look at this and go, this is all such a fugazi, all these battles, these fake political battles that we see on Capitol Hill every day. Because when it comes to, here's a ton of cash on the table, if you're a powerful Democrat, you're a powerful Republican, you're going to get your piece of the pie. They're going to make sure of that. They're all going to help each other. And make sure you get your beak wet and you get your beak wet. Meanwhile, the little guy, the small business guy in the middle of nowhere, he gets screwed over. So, you know, that's the problem right there. And it's too big to blame any one person. You can't blame the president, can't blame the SBA administrator. It's just too big. It's just, it is what it is. It is the bureaucracy of the swamp that is disgusting. And it is something that as much as you hope that President Trump can fight against it and yell about it and scream about it, it's just more powerful than any one person. It's more powerful than the president at this point. But we'll talk more about this in the days to come as more and more of this data comes out. That's for sure.
The Rich Zeoli Show on your schedule. This is the Zeoli Show podcast.
But the big story of the day today is that baseball is back, and I'm so happy about the fact that baseball is back. Thank God America's pastime finally is back. What is this going to mean for us? We'll talk about it. Big story today brought to you by Hint Water. Hint is real water with just a touch of fruit infusion. It's in your grocer's refrigerator, or you can go to drinkhint.com. No sugar, no sweeteners, no artificial flavors. Just water with a touch of real fruit flavor. Hint Water. I want to go to a great guy, a great broadcaster, the host on WIP in the afternoons, my buddy John Marks. Hey, John, thanks for joining me here this morning. How you doing, man?
Rich Zioli, what's up, brother? How are you?
Well, I'm good. I'm excited. Baseball's back. I know this is over there at our sister station, The Whip. You guys must be very 94 WIP. You guys must be very excited to be talking about this again.
Actual sports being back, not all the contract stuff and the Players Association and the leagues. I mean, you know, we haven't had sports since, what, mid-March now. It'll be great. We obviously have the games on 94 WIP, which also is a bonus, Rich. But I think really for the country that, you know, I don't know if baseball is America's pastime still like it used to be. It seems like it's the NFL now. But getting real live sports back, I think, is really important to kind of normalize the country. And even though we know it's not back to normal, it can get started in that direction. And, you know, last night I got off the air at 6 o'clock, and I'm driving home, and I'm listening, and they're giving some of the games that the Phillies are going to be playing. The schedule came out last night. It's awesome. It's great. And I think it's a real good mental boost for the people to realize, like, hey, listen, sports is coming back, businesses are reopening, hopefully everything is going to follow through after that.
John Marks, tell me about the schedule, because I think they're doing it different this year, right? So the games are going to be focused on facing your rivals, which I think will make it even more exciting.
So what they wanted to do was they wanted to, instead of you playing, and it's also 60 games, so you can't, you know, normally 162 games where you can travel out west, you can play some AL teams, you can play everybody. With just 60 games and the players and the teams not wanting to travel all that much. So the Phillies are going to be playing really the teams on the East Coast. So you're going to be playing the normal teams that you play in the NL East, but then you're also playing teams in the AL East. So you'll be playing the Yankees and the Orioles and the Blue Jays, and you'll still be playing your regular teams. You'll be going up to Boston. But, you know, it'll prevent you having to travel more. I guess the longest travel would be down to Miami, which is about, I guess, 3 hours or so. So really what they'll do is it'll be some road trips, right? But short road trips. So rather than traveling all the way out to California or going up to Seattle or wherever you would have to go, they're just limiting travel. So they'll get more games in. 60 games in 66 days is a lot, and they're not going to be playing doubleheaders. So there won't be a lot of off days, but you know, it'll get baseball in. It'll get your fix. You know, Rich, baseball's a marathon. It's not a sprint. And this year's going to be a sprint, so it's going to be different. But I think for people that maybe have gotten a little bit tired of baseball or feel like that we've lost touch with baseball, 60 games in 66 games is going to be a sprint. And I think it's going to be really cool. I'm looking forward to it.
Yeah, I agree with you, John, because normally the season goes so long. You're like, oh, my God, there's still like 100 games to go. Now, with the brevity of it, actually may make it even that much more exciting, because losses and wins are going to take on an entirely different nature now. It's going to be that much more critical because you have less games to play.
Yeah, and think about injuries, right? Like in Philadelphia now, Zach Wheeler, who the Phillies signed in the offseason to a huge free agent contract, his wife is due their first child right at the beginning of the season. So if he goes out, he could miss two starts. He could miss 2 weeks based on having to leave, then having to go back and having to wait and be tested and everything else. So if you're injured or you have something personal like that, I mean, losing two starts in a regular season of 162 games, not that big of a deal. In this season, you're talking about, you know, a sixth of your starts. And so, I mean, really, injuries, things like that. You have players that are opting out now, too, that are electing not to play because of everything that's going on. There's a new dynamic, and it's going to be something that we've never seen before, and it's really going to be difficult to predict. You look at the Phillies 2 years ago. If the season ended after 60 games, they would have made the playoffs. Last year, the Washington Nationals, after 60 games, they wouldn't have made the playoffs. They had a terrible start to the season. So it doesn't necessarily mean that the best team is going to be the champion this year, which is different. And I think that's really cool. It actually gives the Phillies a better chance to win.
Which is great. We need that. I mean, our city needs that. It would be wonderful for our own morale. Every afternoon, 2 to 6 p.m., John Marks and Ike Reese host the afternoon show on 94 WIP. Check them out. It's a great show. And nobody throws headphones and cries like a baby and walks off and defends Karens. John, let me ask you this question, John Marks, while I have you. I had to do it. I can't help myself.
I was waiting for it, Rich.
I just can't help myself. So the NFL. Now, it's a whole other different animal, obviously, because baseball, you don't really have to touch each other that much. I mean, yeah, guy slides in. Are they doing slides in baseball this year, or have they cut that out?
Yeah, slides, no spitting, no high-fiving,
no slides, no hugging.
No
spitting and no high-fiving, huh? Okay. Can you still, so you can't even, have chewing tobacco and spit all over the field like the good old days?
No chewing tobacco. No, you can't. I mean, and if you think about it, people don't realize they're doing it. Players don't realize they're doing it. So I don't know if they're actually going to be calling players out and saying, hey, you can't spit, and finding them. But they're not supposed to do it.
No spitting. The NFL is a totally different animal, obviously, if they allow tackling. Now, I've been saying for a while now that the NFL seems to me for years they've been trying to get rid of tackling. They've been trying to do more and more because of the concussions and the CTEs. And I think the commissioner is a little, as I would say, woke. And I think he would love to get rid of them anyway. So is this his opportunity, John, to get rid of tackling once and for all and to make football more of maybe flag football or touch? Instead of actually blitzing, all you got to do is just yell blitz and that counts as a blitz?
Yeah, flag football. No, it's funny because you said it right. What we're going through right now, there's a lot of stuff that won't come back, whether it's in politics or in life or in business or whatever. And with the NFL, I don't think that you're going to see the game as far as the physicality change all that much. What I think you're going to see is you're going to see the preseason, right? Like for instance, let me give you an example. What the players don't want now in training camp are what they call 11-on-11s, where you actually practice in a game situation. There's 11 players on offense, there's 11 players on defense, just like in a game situation, and you're more or less scrimmaging. They're not going to have that this year. They're going to have what they call 7-on-7. So 7-on-7s is more or less just playing flag football. It's dropping back, throwing the ball. There's no tackling. There's no touching or whatever. And it doesn't seem like there's going to be a preseason. So you're going to go right to the regular season. And you know what? This is what the players want. So the players want this because they're not getting really paid for preseason games. They're getting a certain amount of money that I would certainly like to get. But in the big picture of it, the money they're making is for the regular season. So they don't want to play in these preseason games. So they were already trying to get rid of the preseason. So now this is their opportunity to actually get rid of the preseason. So it doesn't seem like there's going to be preseason games. And practicing in training camp leading up to the season, that's going to change too. So you're not going to have what you used to have, which is hitting, putting on the pads, hitting, tackling, and everything else. So while the games I don't think will change that much, everything else leading up to the season will be totally different, and you're already seeing that this year.
And weren't they talking about some special helmet that they were trying to make that the players could breathe in but also not breathe on each other, similar to the face mask that we have to wear at Entercom World Headquarters?
Yes, they wanted them to wear full masks, almost like a helmet where you could just have slight breathing coming out of it. Hey, here's the thing, Rich.
Like a scuba helmet.
If you're going to play football, there's going to be risk. You can try to take all the risk you want out of it, kind of like with injury, right? You can try to take head injuries out of football. It's a violent sport. Guys are going to get hurt, so you can do your best to try to prevent that. But ultimately, guys are still going to get hurt, and you're still going to have injuries and head injuries. Same thing with this. If you're out there tackling each other, if you're out there running and needing to breathe and spit is coming out of your mouth, and this is an airborne virus, guys are going to get infected that are playing. So you can try all you want. Unless you put these guys in a bubble and have them play football, there's going to be risk. So they're trying their best, but the players don't want this helmet that they're talking about. They need to be able to breathe. They need to be able to see. They already have a helmet on. You know what I mean? It's not like that they're running around without a helmet. It's already tough to see with the helmet on. So now you're going to put this additional device on where you can't see or you can't breathe. They're not going to have it.
But and it's so funny you say unless you put the guys in a bubble, but that's exactly what the NBA is doing, right? They're having the quarantine league. Isn't that what they're calling it now? Where all the players are going to be down in Orlando and they're not going to leave. They're all going to stay in the same place, have the NBA tournaments and then go home, right?
Yeah, the bubble and they're, here's the thing. I think everybody would be great. It's with baseball's not in the bubble, but you're not supposed to leave the bubble. But ultimately, they can leave if they want to, right? I mean, you can only say, hey, you can't leave. You'll be fine if you go elsewhere. But do we really believe that every player is going to say, okay, I'm going to stay in here. I'm not going to go out. I'm not going to go out to a bar. I'm not going to go out to a restaurant.
Hell no. Of course they're going to go out. Come on. We would go out. I mean, it's exactly what we would be leading them. Guys, come on. It's fine. Let's go. Come on. We'll all stay 6 feet apart at the bar. What could possibly go wrong?
You have single, wealthy, young athletes that are on Instagram and on Twitter that have their pick of whatever they want to do. and they're going to go do it. So I think you have to realize that going in. But, and, you know, so you can have a bubble, but unless you really have a bubble and you cannot let these guys leave. So, I mean, is it going to work? I don't know. You know, I think we'd be naive to think that in all of these sports, whether it's baseball or basketball or whatever they are, whatever the four sports and the MLS, guys are going to get it. You know, guys are going to get infected with it. It's just the process of testing a lot, finding out when they have a positive test, getting them out of there, hoping not to spread it. I mean, honestly, I look at baseball. As long as these guys are doing what they're doing, which is practicing social distancing, wearing the mask when they're supposed to, and then going home and not going out, they'll be fine. But, you know, that's the problem. You have to make sure the guys aren't doing that.
Yeah, and, you know, John Marks, as we talk about, too, I mean, with sports is inherent risk, a risk of concussion, risk of getting broken, you know, fractures, a risk of ball getting hit in your head. I mean, there's always risk. Players, you're drawn to sports because you are a risk taker. You like that. I mean, that's part of what makes up your character and why you want to be on the field. And also, being a risk taker and being somebody who's an adventurer by nature, the idea that you're going to be a young, healthy guy in your 20s making boatloads of cash and staying in your hotel room watching old reruns of Bosom Buddies, it's not happening, let's be honest. But that's okay, though, right? Because we're dealing with healthy young guys who will be able, if they do get the virus, to recover from it most likely. So it's not the end of the world. I just think the key is they have to be transparent about it. If they go to a hotel the night before and they sneak out because they want to go down to the bar down the street, which is, I mean, nobody could blame these guys for this. They're in the prime of their life, sitting on a ton of cash, and every woman wants to be near them. They just need to be honest the next day and go in the locker room and go, guys, I was out last night, right? Is that too much to ask?
Yeah, but here's the problem with the NBA. They'll get fined big time. I mean, these guys will get in trouble. So I mean, you're right. If that was the case, they'd say, hey, listen, but then they have to quarantine, and then they have to be away from the team, I would guess, for like a period of 7 days. I don't know. But to your point, you're right. It's easy for me sitting here in my mid-40s to say, like, hey, I wouldn't go out. Cause I don't go out. I didn't go out before all this started. You know what I mean? Like, I'm at
right.
home, and I'm doing
kids.
Whatever else.
We don't
else.
Go out, John. That's the reality, you know?
I just want to sleep. I have no interest in doing anything else. You know that with a couple young ones at home. But with, you know, when I was 25, I can tell you what I'd be doing right now. I'd be trying to get out whenever I could.
So really, the guys are going to have to be, if they do go out, and they are going to go out, they have to be underground about it because they can't. But then what's going to happen then when they get ratted out by their teammates or somebody else? I saw you out the bar last night. There's pictures on Instagram, social media. When that happens, and then they're going to have players who are taken out, to your point, they have to quarantine for 7 days. That's going to be a whole mess. And if anybody drops a dime on the other player, that's going to be a whole mess too. This is going to be fun to watch, I think. I'm looking forward to this.
There's a lot going on, and a lot of it's not going on the court, Rich, so it gives us a lot to talk about.
It really does, John. It really does. Tune in today, 2 to 6 p.m., for John Marks and Ike Reese on our sister station, 94 WIP. And, of course, follow John on Twitter at John Marks Media. Hey, thanks, brother. This was fun. Let's do it again.
Oh, awesome, man. Thank you.
Talk Radio 1210 WPHD.
We really need new phones.
T-Mobile will cover the cost of four amazing new iPhone 15s, and each line is only $25 a month.
New iPhone 15s? It's better
over here. Only at T-Mobile, get four iPhone 15s on us and four lines for $25 per line per month with eligible trade-in when you switch.
Minimum of 4 lines for $25 per line per month with auto pay discount using debit or bank account. $5 more per line without auto pay, plus taxes and fees. Phone fee at 24 monthly bill credits for well qualified customers. Contact us before canceling account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance on required finance agreement due. $35 per line connection charge applies. See T-Mobile.com.